This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Now, we've all heard about the most famous diary in the world, that of Anne Frank. Well, our first guest today has written a meticulous account of the fascinating, convoluted, and sometimes ugly publishing history of the world's most famous diary, and about the person that brought it to light in the first place, her father, Otto. Welcome to the show, Karen Bartlett.
Hello there. Nice of you to have me on.
You're very welcome. Nice to chat to you. Now, I'm a massive Anne Frank fan, and I've just finished watching A Small Light, which was a drama about Meep Geese. Now, she was the one that, when they got taken to the camp, she picked the diary up and hid it in her drawer, didn't she?
Yes, that's right. I mean, it was something that she sort of did instinctively, wasn't it, that she wanted to keep Anne's diary and to hopefully keep it for when Anne came back. But of course, we know really tragically that that's not what happened. And, you know, she kept this document and was able to give it back to her father, Otto, none of them knowing that it was going to become, you know, one of the most famous documents and books in the world.
Yeah, indeed. I don't think anybody knew. And it appears that even Otto Frank himself, who was very close to his youngest daughter, Anne, he saw a side to her that he really didn't know.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I suppose if most parents read their children's diaries, they might see a side to them that they didn't know. And he was astonished by what he read in there. Not just, you know, her very personal things that she wrote, but how mature she was and what a fantastic writer she was and how much insight she had into things. So I think for him it was, you know, on the one hand, you know, this very sort of precious last memory of one of his daughters, but also kind of this amazing insight into the human being that she was. And it was a sort of a wonderful revelation for him at the same time.
Yeah, it must have been tough. I mean, I in this particular drama, who knows whether it's true, but in this particular drama, Meep Geese was in two minds whether to give it to him because she didn't want to upset him. But thank goodness she did.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one of those things that nobody could know it at the time, but literally changes the course of world history, isn't it? And we, you know, we hear of these moments and that was definitely one of those moments.
Yeah, for sure. Now, nobody realised how famous it would become, but also nobody realised that it would spark a bitter battle that would embroil Otto Frank into a legal contest. Now, I didn't know about that. What happened then?
Well, it sparked several battles and several legal contests. I mean, it's really been an incredibly sort of divisive diary. You know, I think the first one that you're talking about, which I talk about a lot in the book, is his battle with this man who at first seemed like a friend, who'd read the diary. He was a writer, a Jewish-American Israeli writer himself, and he wanted to help Otto Frank kind of publicize the book and get it published in other countries. But gradually, as their sort of relationship progressed, this other man wanted to take over the diary himself. He wanted to translate it. He wanted to write his version of the Anne Frank play in the Anne Frank film. And Otto didn't want him to. And, you know, what should have been a sort of a very good and close friendship sort of turned into this really bitter struggle between two enemies. And it ended up in court, and this other writer sort of threatened to kill Otto Frank at one point. And really sort of said quite terrible things about Otto, which weren't true. And, you know, I think through this whole story, after that court case, Otto was involved in other court cases with sort of famous neo-Nazis who tried to say that the diary wasn't true. And so he had so really for the rest of his life, sort of Otto was embroiled in having to sort of stick up for Anne and stick up for the diary. And it took a massive toll on his health. I mean, here's a guy who's, by all accounts, for all people who knew him, a very sort of lovely, gentle, nice man, who's really trying to do the best thing for his daughter's diary and spread her message in the world. And it's sort of tragic that having lost his daughters, which is the worst thing that you could imagine happening to anybody, he then has to sort of spend his life fighting these terrible court cases with people who are quite horrible to him. And, you know, it took a huge sort of toll on his mental and emotional health.
Yeah, yeah. Amazingly, though, he did live to in his 90s. Was he about 91 when he died?
Yes, he was. I mean, he lived, you know, a long life, and he had a very happy sort of second phase of his life. He got married again, and he had a stepdaughter who I worked with on her book about her experiences in Auschwitz herself.
Really?
And he had grandchildren through his stepdaughter. So, you know, he had a sort of a very happy second phase of his life, which I think everyone would agree that he more than deserved that happiness after the sort of terrible things that he'd gone through in the first part of his life.
Yeah, because it was only him that survived, wasn't it? His wife and, of course, his two daughters, Margot and Anne, they were all killed.
Yes, that's right. And, you know, he returned. You know, what we sometimes don't realize is that the people who did survive kind of eventually returned to the places that they had come from originally. So Otto back to Amsterdam. And, you know, for quite a long time, most of them didn't really necessarily know what had happened to their family. So they, you know, they'd somehow managed to survive the camp. They'd made it back across Europe. It took a long time after the war for people to get from place to place. So it could take like a year for them to get back to where they came from. And then they have to wait and see, you know, what has happened to their family.
Yeah.
And Otto first found out, had heard that his wife had died. And then, of course, he heard the terrible news about Anne and Margot. And he was just a broken man, as you can imagine, at that point. I mean, he really had nothing to go on for. But, you know, luckily, Miep had saved the diary. And I think that was sort of his salvation in a way.
Yeah, maybe that was his motivation for carrying on.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. And feeling that, you know, that Anne had this, through the diary, Anne had a message to the world, that it wasn't just her personal story, but a message to the world about peace and human understanding. And that sort of became his mission, really. Because we kind of forget that although now everybody thinks, you know, the diary is so famous and everybody thinks it's wonderful, I mean, you know, when he first tried to publish it, nobody was interested. You know, everyone was like, well, who would be interested in a diary about a young girl? You know, it didn't make sense. And only he was the one who could really understand that it was important, and that firstly, that he was going to get that diary published. And secondly, that when it was published, you know, it was going to be published all around the world in all of these countries that some of them hadn't even been touched or affected by the Second World War. And then it had this kind of huge message. So he always believed that. But for a long time, you know, he was the only person who believed it.
And within all these legal battles, did he win? Did he remain in control of the diary?
Yes, he won with qualifications, I would say. I mean, I think the story of the diary is always quite complicated, and Otto's business dealings were quite complicated, mainly because he was just a very nice person, and he kind of always wanted to tell people what he thought they wanted to hear, rather than being very sort of like straightforward and businesslike. So sometimes he would have these conversations with people, and they would take it as being that he had promised them something, which wasn't really his intention. But then, you know, this would lead to all sorts of kind of entanglements and problems later on. So, for example, the writer that he had the court case with, yes, Otto Frank did win that. But on the other hand, that writer did end up getting sort of some money out of it. The trials for the Holocaust deniers were more complicated. He did prove, you know, without a doubt that Anne had written the diary, which is really important. But also, you know, it was shown that a lot of other people had edited the diary, which isn't always known. So Otto edited a version of it himself. Then different publishers edited different versions. So, you know, the diary that we read today, or the diary that we would have read when it was first published, wasn't necessarily, you know, exactly word for word what Anne wrote in those notebooks. So, you know, there's a lot of kind of discussion about that, and how much should you edit things? And if you edit things a lot, does that, is it still true to say that it's the complete works of, you know, the original person who wrote it? So yes, he did win, but with everything, there was kind of nuances and sort of shades of grey, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I think there has to be. I mean, I read that, you know, he took certain things out because she was between 13 and 15 at the time. So she was talking about the boy that was in the annex as well. And there were certain things that he didn't want to embarrass her posthumously. Mm. So he did take things like that out. And also there's, of course, the translation from presumably Dutch, which you've written in Dutch, and to English and to all the other languages.
Yes, that's right. I mean, he did take some of those parts out, and he took out parts where she was, you know, particularly angry and saying derogatory things about her mother. I think for most of us can understand as teenage girls, the things we did write in our diaries about our mothers. And of course, you know, his wife, Anne's mother, was also dead at that point. And I think he felt sort of honor bound to kind of protect her memory a bit as well, too. And then the translations. Yes. I mean, Otto, you know, if you read through his papers in the archives, he complains a lot about some of the translations of the diary, and some of them with good reason. I mean, you know, some of them were, you know, pretty terrible, those first translations. And he wanted to kind of, obviously, not just have a literal translation, but also try to capture a bit of Anne's spirit. And, you know, what does it, can you translate it in a way that it still sounds like it's the voice of a teenage girl?
Yeah.
And all of those things were quite tricky. And even things like, you know, some of the first translations, Anne had written a lot of phrases, you know, like in English, you know, you might say it's raining cats and dogs, or those kind of expressions. She'd use those expressions, and the people who were translating them wouldn't understand what the expression was, and that they translate it very literally. So it didn't really necessarily always make sense. So, yeah, he had a big struggle with the translations.
Yeah, I'm sure. And I mean, it became, you know, it's 75 years ago now, it became a multi-million pound industry, what with films and books, and you can even go to the house, visit Anne Frank's house. Who is in control of it now he's passed away?
Well, different organisations are in control of different parts. So the diary itself, and everything connected to Anne and Otto Frank officially is under the control of the Anne Frank Foundation, which is in Switzerland. So they are absolutely sole control of her diary and her legacy. The house in Amsterdam, which of course most people associate with Anne, I think we've probably all been to see it and look around it, was also set up by Otto. It was actually set up by Otto before he set up the foundation in Switzerland. And that is a completely separate organization. So that has sort of separate from the foundation, separate funding, and that owns the house, but it doesn't actually own the rights to the diary or any parts of her legacy. And as I sort of talk about in the book as well, you know, since Otto died, there's been, you know, within Anne Frank world, between the foundation, between the house, between sometimes the Dutch government, and between different individuals who knew Anne, a lot of disputes and fighting and court cases between those people, really, about who can speak for Anne, who can represent her, who can talk about the diary, what do they say when they talk about the diary. So it continues to be very, very contentious and sort of bitterly fought over.
I'm sure. The most amazing thing is it appears from what we know that she was desperate. She kept saying after the war's over, I'm going to be a famous writer, and she actually became one.
Yes, I mean, it's sort of wonderful and really tragic at the same time, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it is.
I'm sure had she lived, she would have been a famous writer.
Yes, yes, indeed. Well, thank you so much for shedding some new light on it all. You mentioned that you've written Anne's stepsisters, but what other books have you written?
Well, yes, that was my first book after Auschwitz with Eva Schloss, which is quite well known. And Eva is a a fantastic writer and educator on the Holocaust herself. I have written another book about the Second World War, about the German family who were behind how to have created the gas chambers. And that came out of some of my research from these books, in terms of I read a tiny bit about this family and I thought, my goodness, like, what would make an ordinary family want to do that? You know, how could an ordinary company, you know, an ordinary people want to do such a sort of a horrible industry and horrible crimes? Mm-hmm. So I wrote that book, and I have also written a book about Dusty Springfield, which is very different topic, but very enjoyable, I have to say.
Wonderful. Well, this particular book, we're selling it on our website right now for our listeners. It's called The Diary That Changed the World, The Remarkable Story of Otto Frank and the Diary of Anne Frank. And it's by Karen Bartlett, who we're speaking to now. Karen, do you have a website as well?
Yes, I do. KarenBartlett.co.uk.
Great. So we can see all your other books on there.
Lovely.
Great stuff. Well, it's been great to chat to you. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.